Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time. All right, welcome to the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio, and I almost forgot this myself.
Start spreading the news.
That, of course, means Schomburg Stu is joining me. How you doing, Stu?
All right. It's nice to see the Bulls winning again, finally.
All right, if you'd like to call in and talk to Stu and I here on this Friday, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something possibly popping up over there sometime tomorrow morning. It should end up there. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still never got Stu on Twitter, but I am out there at Burke Time. And as always, feel free to send me anything you'd like to mention me, have me mention to Stu. Just keep it clean, and I will send it that way. So,
all right.
Okay, well, here you go, Stu. Apparently, 53-year-old Mike Tyson is considering making a comeback.
What?
Is he coming back to fight you? Is that what's going on? Did you know about that?
I did not know about that. Are you sure it's not a angle so he'll switch, surprise everybody and switch over to the WWE?
Yeah, well, apparently he's doing something for charity is what it seems to be set up as. Let me see. There's an article here on it. See if it gives a little more detail on, like, who he's going to fight or, you know, how, who or what they're going to do. It says to make some money to help some homeless and drug affected. And then he drops the MF bomb. So that sounds like a Mike Tyson interview.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it doesn't say who he would fight or when the fight would take place. But yeah, apparently he's going to come back for a charity fight, which, you know, I guess in one way is a good thing for him, just depending on who he ends up in the ring with.
Well, I hope he doesn't end up fighting Lennox Lewis, because the last time he fought Lewis, he wound up cutting the ring lights.
So, yeah, I think his last fight was, like, against somebody named Kevin McBride or something like that. But, yeah, I don't know, you know, how, if or how or what they might be planning. But, you know, I mean, they put up a nice little workout video of him. And, you know, obviously it looks like he still punches pretty hard. So I would have no desire to be hit by Mike Tyson. But
no.
I guess it would be, would he be able to hit anybody he got into the ring with?
And, yeah, he turned his life around pretty well, because some of his I saw a couple of his concerts a few years ago on HBO or whatever they call those things, and he was pretty funny. He did a pretty solid hour or so, and was quite amusing to watch.
Yeah, he you know, for a while there, it looked like he was really going down the wrong path there. But yeah, he's done a, you know, a nice little turnaround. You know, he managed to have some success. You know, he had that cartoon for a little while, too, that did really well. I think it was like Mike Tyson's Mysteries or something like that. So, you know, he's, you know, not quite the lost cause that, unfortunately, it looked like he was going to be.
No, he certainly has made a nice turnaround. And did they say that if this exhibition match takes place, will there be an actual audience, or will it be like most other events we've been they've been discussing lately before an empty arena.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, with no date on when this is going to happen, there's no real information besides the fact that, you know, like the title here says he's planning to come out of retirement for a charity fight. But that's kind of the extent of the information, you know, and like the article said, it was to raise money for homeless people. Other than that, you don't get anywhere. There's no date. There's no opponent. There's no venue. So, you know, either this is something that's just in the works or, you know, maybe Tyson's people just put it out there to get the talk started.
Well, maybe he'll fight Billy Gunn.
Bart Gunn, you mean?
Bart Gunn, wasn't he? Wasn't that the one who beat Steve Williams in that that thing they had a few years ago for the WWE?
Yeah, Bart was the one. Bart was the one that won Brawl for All. So Billy is actually still wrestling. His kid is a wrestler now as well.
Well, he's been around a long time, but it will be interesting to see Tyson in action. He was a vicious fighter in his day, but boy, he certainly didn't have much success his last few years in the ring.
No. Well, you know, another one of those guys who hung around too long, you know, his last fights were at like 38 plus years old. And, you know, that's tough to, you know, that obviously that's a tough business to be in at that age. So it you know, did not go well for him, but, you know, like we talked about, it seems like he's been, you know, he's been able to turn things around. So, you know, hopefully this, you know, this will be something he can have a little fun with and nobody gets hurt and they raise some money and then it'll be a good thing.
I wonder if this match does take place, will he take it easy on his opponent or will he be the Mike Tyson of old and a violent, vicious knockout type puncher in the ring?
Yeah, well, you know, it reminds me, I just caught the end of the last Rocky movie, which actually was just called Rocky Balboa. And they do that thing where he comes back to fight an exhibition against the champ. So it's kind of humorous that, you know, now we might get to see, you know, Tyson one more time, I guess, if, you know, things go on.
Yeah, if he fought the champion, I wouldn't even be able to tell you who the champion is because they've got so many different organizations with so many different champions and so many different divisions that it's impossible. I could not tell you. The last I remember, there was a heavyweight fighter from Russia who was the champion. I'm not sure if he lost his last fight or not. So that's about all I could tell you. I couldn't even begin to think of what his name is.
You know, if I remember right, I believe the heavyweight belt is pretty close to being unified compared to, you know, all those other goofy ones. But yeah, I'm trying to remember how they just had that fight. It was Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury.
That's right. That's
so
right,
I know my Fury won whatever titles were on the line there. But yeah, there's still, you know, there still appears to be a, you know, a multitude of other guys that are holding titles. It looks like Anthony Joshua holds a couple titles, and I have no idea who Manuel Char or Trevor Bryan are, but they're one's listed as an interim champ and one's listed as a regular champ. In the heavyweight division. So there you go.
Yeah, that's when I stopped paying attention to the thing, when it started to branch out, I guess, with all these different factions holding titles, and it's impossible to keep track of, really. And in the old days, there was one champion, Rocky Marciano, undefeated champion. There was Ezra Charles and Jersey Joe Walcott, and even Mike Tyson and Lennox Lewis. They were all recognized as the champion, but it's different now. And that is good.
Yeah, you know, once the WBA and the WBC split off, it really kind of went downhill after that. And it's just, you know, like I said, I mean, you look at these guys, and like the one guy this Manuel Char has a 31-4 record, and I don't know who he is.
Yeah, never heard of the guy.
So.
And, you know, even in the old days, by the way, John, and when a guy came along unheralded and he had a 31-2 record or 31-4, the quality of his opponents left a bit to be desired. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure there's some, as I believe one of the boxing terms is, tomato cans on these guys' resumes. But, that's how you do it. You know, that's how you build up your record to, you know, get yourself in the top 10 and get the bigger fights and, those kind of fun things that you got to do. I know we had a promoter a very long time ago who used to book the wrestlers to take dives for their fighters in Chicago.
To improve their record, their one-loss record.
Yeah, you know, you would get a boxing name and they would get you approved with, you know, you'd get your license because they had the commission as well. So, you know, you would get your name, you'd get your license under this name. And, you know, they would go out and, you know, they'd always want the fight to go about 3 or 4 rounds and then you'd get knocked out. And obviously the wrestler could sell it like he got knocked out.
Yeah.
So, it always helped kind of, you know, pad the guy a little bit. And, you know, I mean, a legitimate heavyweight wrestler is going to look like a decent opponent as a boxer. So.
Yeah, I have the look and he'll probably work a good fight.
Yeah. So, you know, it was always a thing. I know a couple guys who would pick up paydays doing that, and you know, it was just kind of like, oh, okay, you know, I was too heavy, so I was never asked. But yeah, you know, there were quite I think I knew 3 or 4 guys who did that to make money on the side, and you know, never won a fight, just went out there and had a good time, and you know.
did they collect a decent paycheck for doing this?
Yeah, you know, it was normally, $100 or more, which, you know, isn't bad for, you know, what a round goes, 3 minutes? So you're working 9 to 12 minutes and picking up $100. That's not a bad work.
Yeah, it could be a dangerous gig, though, because if he's an untrained fighter against a legitimate boxer, he could get seriously injured if the boxer with the reputation and the skills doesn't take it easy on him.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing, obviously, you know, normally it's always kind of worked out beforehand how it's going to go. So, you know, that luckily, you know, that never happened to anybody I know. So we, you know, that was okay. But, yeah, you know, it was definitely a shady business then, and I'm sure it still is now, if not more.
Right. Well, to this day, there's still speculation about the phantom punch that then Cassius Clay threw against Sonny Liston in their second fight.
Yeah, no, that's been talk for, oh, geez, how long now? You know, and I mean, there's always, you know, always different talks about if this guy really beat that guy or how it worked out, so.
Yeah, not to say he wasn't, Cassius Clay wasn't a great boxer. He was. But that punch, and I've looked at it from different angles, and I still question its validity to this day.
Yeah, you know, I've seen it a couple times, but I've never really looked closely at it, so.
Well, believe it or not, some boxing experts say it was just a great punch thrown at the right time with the right angle, and it was legit. And these guys know what they're talking about, so maybe we're wrong about this. Maybe it was a good, solid punch.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know enough to make an actual probably decision myself. So, I'm just one of those fun things. So, but now I know. Are you caught up on The Last Dance, because I'm still basically 3 episodes behind?
No, I'm caught up on them. I've watched the first 4. and very entertaining.
Yeah, and so far they've been okay.
They've been okay, and I'm surprised about some of the graphic language that they let go through on ESPN.
Yeah, that was the thing I found interesting, and now maybe you can tell me, this last one had a lot to do with the Bad Boy Pistons?
Yeah, about the Bulls finally overcoming the Pistons and the fact that they did that when the Bulls swept them in, I think it was, what was it, 90? Around then, 91, and they didn't shake hands with the Bulls as they walked off the court. And there's even new controversy about this with Isaiah Thomas's interview that took place a few days ago. I don't know if you saw that or not. And to this day, he says, well, hey, Jordan was a great player, no doubt about it. Yeah, he's the fourth best player I played against. And he mentioned three players that he thought were better than the Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson.
Interestingly that Jordan beat Johnson in a final, and I believe he beat Bird to get to a final.
Right.
So I don't know how much validity that has, but I think a lot of that is just Isaiah being bitter about the way kind of the way history has portrayed him. Because he was a great player in his own right and definitely a Hall of Famer.
No question about it.
But, there's just nothing, unfortunately, there's no way he's not going to come out of this looking bad. And then to make a comment like that, not only does he come out looking bad, he comes out looking stupid, because he's talking about the greatest basketball player of all time. He's the fourth. So,
have you noticed, by the way, that NBC Sports Channel Chicago is running they're showing The Last Dance. They call it the Last Chapter, I think, which may be getting some publicity from that show. They're showing the 7-round series against the Indiana Pacers in 1998. They went 7 games, as you know, and I believe the home teams won every game in that series. And it was not an easy victory for the Bulls. Very close. Most of the games were very close and competitive, and all came down to the last basket or two, except for one Bull fairly easy blowout win. But it was not an easy series for them by any stretch of the imagination. And you could see that the glory years were going to be a thing of the past after that season.
Well, the humorous thing about those Piston teams, and I mean, they had some great teams. When they always try to compare teams with other eras, the Pistons would have absolutely no chance against any team in this era. Just because the way the game is called now, they would have so many guys in foul trouble before the first quarter was over.
Yeah.
As rough as they played, as touchy as the style is now, they literally would be out of players.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that. I've been watching, I don't watch the whole games, of course, but I've been watching the reruns of the Indiana Bulls that are going on right now. And the defense is fierce. I mean, compared to now, of course, they don't allow hand-checking anymore, and that's a big difference right in itself. But the defense is very, very tough on both sides. And you could see that, by the way, in that ESPN show. They have a lot of good close-ups of the action. And, boy, it was rough and rugged under the boards. And I don't think you see too much of that anymore.
Yeah, well, I know there was an interesting thing, and I don't know if it was in the series or not, but, they talked to Dennis Rodman about how LeBron would have done. And he just simply explained what they would have done to him. About how Scottie Pippen would have easily been able to shut him down with the kind of defensive player he was, and that, Rodman wouldn't have let him dunk. He would have basically put him on his rear end every time he tried to dunk. Now obviously as good as LeBron is, or actually as great as LeBron is, they probably wouldn't have nullified him. But I definitely saw Rodman's point. So, yeah, it was it's interesting one because, everybody talks about how, this guy is that or that guy is this. And, you know, just you try to plug these guys that play now with the way the game is set up, and they would just have such struggles in this era where, you know, this Last Dance is coming up at. You know, it would just be – it would be odd to see them just try to compete.
Yeah, and it's sad to me when I think back – I'm watching these games, and then I think back to the current crop of basketball in the NBA, and it's a major difference. And to me, it's just not – the basketball now is just not as good because of the lack of defense and what the players – what the offensive players get away with now.
Yeah, well, I know, and I wish I would have kept it because it was really interesting. But on my Twitter feed, which, of course, is at Burktime, one of the people I follow put up an NBA shot chart from this past season, and they compared it to I don't know how many years they went back. It may have been 10 years or 5 years. It wasn't like they went back to the 60s or anything like that. And the difference is unbelievable. Now every hot spot where all the shots come from is behind the three-point line.
Yeah.
That's where the majority of the jump shots in the NBA come from is behind the three-point line. Where this other chart, obviously they still had three-pointers mixed in. But, yeah, there's some, you know, the hot spots are just outside the lane from, you know, 12, 15 feet away. And that really, that intermittent jump shot has just disappeared from the NBA game.
And here's what I object to. I don't object to the three-point shooters. I mean, if they're skilled enough, they could make the shots. But how many of them are actually contested?
Yeah.
By the defense.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, now, I mean, there's no, you know, no real defense played at any, you know, any point. I honestly think these guys believe they're playing defense, or that's just kind of how it was taught now or then. But yeah, it's not the kind of defense like I'm used to watching. So,
if Curry's a great ball player, I understand that he's a great shooter, but if he played in the other eras that we've been talking about, he would have been beaten up unbelievably.
Yeah, I mean, well, remember how, you know, I mean, he's very much akin to what Craig Hodges was back in the day. And remember how hard Hodges had to work to get shots?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, there was a reason Craig Hodges wasn't a superstar. But, you know, in this era, he would be. Because he can do exactly what everybody else does. He can stand out there at 25, 26 feet and make the shot. And
yeah,
he's really good at it.
Right, then. And it's disappointing to me to see the lack of defense in the NBA now. We've talked about this before, and it makes for, to me, a very, very tedious game.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it bores the hell out of me. So,
yeah,
I can't watch. It's just not it's not worth me watching. It's really not.
Yeah. And maybe it'll tighten up just a little bit in the playoffs, but not nearly what they used to. What they did in the playoffs years ago. Now it's tighter, a little tighter than the regular season, but not enough to make any great significance in the play.
Yeah, no, you know, when I watch a game and I see a guy take three or four steps with the basketball and they double dribble, and it's just kind of like, yeah, I have absolutely zero interest in this right now. So.
And it's interesting that you pointed it out, because I'm watching some of these old games that they've been showing on the sports channel. They call traveling. They call offensive fouls. They call them quite a bit.
Yeah, until the NBA told them to stop calling it to make the game more exciting for fans, you know, the refs used to, you know, they used to call the game the proper way. I mean, they used to follow the rules, but – you know, and I mean, again, this goes back to, you know, everybody has that short attention span, and they don't want to see great defense, and they don't want to see 12-foot jump shots. They want to see the guys run up and down the floor and dunk, and when they don't dunk, they want to see three-point shots. They don't care about anything else, or, you know, the fancy pass. They like to see that.
Right, exactly. And interesting, as I mentioned, I've been watching these games, and I noticed something. In the hard-fought playoff game, the players don't argue with the refs very much. Even if it's a little bit of a controversial call, they just travel or a charge. They just start playing basketball. They take the ball out of bounds and start playing basketball again. Very little in the way of arguing compared to now, what it is now.
So, yeah, no, now they argue everything. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But, you know, while we are on the NBA, they did announce today that they have indefinitely postponed the draft lottery and combine. So, the draft was supposed to be May 19th. And then, you know, the combine is usually a week or two before that. So they're postponing that. No word yet on still what their plans are for the remainder of this season.
Yeah, I'm surprised they're postponing it, actually, because they couldn't have done it via remote broadcast like so many other shows they're having right now.
Yeah, the draft is scheduled for June 25th. My fault there.
Okay,
so,
that's right. It's in June, that's right. But why couldn't they do it via remote like everybody else is doing? I mean, you see some of these shows and specials, they do a multi-screen type thing, four different screens, and the people are by. They could have done it. They could have done the draft that way very easily. I'm surprised they're not doing it like
you
that.
You would think, especially with the success the NFL just had doing theirs that way last weekend.
Yeah.
I don't know, how hard would it be to get Adam Silver together and let him pull the balls out or let the hopper do its job and have the draft lottery and get the draft all set up and then, just do it virtually online. I think the thing that this points to me is that they're actually going to be dumb enough to try to finish the regular season. So you can't have the draft because you don't know where all the teams are right now.
Yeah, that's true. That's also a factor. And to me, it seems like it's a ridiculous point to continue this season the way things are going now. I mean, why don't they just forget it? I mean, they'll be up against baseball, and you know that they don't too well in the ratings when they compare against baseball.
Yeah, well, you know, to be fair, they haven't done well in the ratings as it is. I don't know why.
No.
Well, again, Daniel talked about this the other day. The reason that the NHL and the NBA and the Major League Baseball are all trying to get back as quick as they can is they don't want to give up that television money. You know, this is what pays their bills. So, you know, the more games that are shown, the more television money that goes into their pocket. You know, otherwise they're going to be on the hook for returning a lot of this. And you damn well know it's not about anything else but money at this point.
And can the television revenue compensate for the lack of crowds? The lack of a paid game?
Yeah, actually, I don't know if it can compensate, but it can at least alleviate some of that because you go from having absolutely zero revenue to some type of revenue.
I'm sure there'll be enough sponsors coming on board if they were to play the games in an empty arena.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, if you think about it now, if they were to start playing, the ratings would probably be much better than what they were just because, you know, I mean, look at how well the NFL draft did just because everybody's desperate to watch something.
Yeah, they probably would do well. They would probably do a lot better in the ratings if they resume play than they did prior to the pandemic.
So, I don't know. You know, and now that, you know, I know like here in Illinois, I think we're still kind of locked down compared to a lot of states. But I know, you know, last week the NBA said that they're going to allow teams in the states where, you know, they've started to open things back up again. They're going to allow them back into their practice facilities. So, you know, I don't know what, like I said, I don't know what they have planned, but obviously they have something planned.
Yeah, I know that some states are opening things up a little bit, and I thought it was incredibly risky for some of the beaches to be open now in Florida. And But if that's what they're going to do, that's what they're going to do. But I think it's a risk on the part of the people who start to go back to the beaches again.
Yeah, you know, I understand the cramped up feeling, and you know you want to get out and you want to do something, but yeah, I don't know if it's worth it. You know, I mean, you know, is it worth taking that chance? But I guess to some people it is.
Yeah, I guess so, and we'll see how the thing progresses over the next few months, and we're hopeful at least that the state of Illinois will open things up a little bit at the end of May. Now, I think that it's been kind of extended, this social distancing, until the end of May in the state of Illinois, and we'll see if they decide to open things up again and open things up normally, or at least semi-normally, in June.
So, yeah, you know, you hope, you know, I mean, cause eventually, you know, we got one way or the other, you got to let people out again. You know, you just can't keep, you know, trying to keep them locked up. I mean, I know there are already people suing the governor technically for overstepping his power. So.
Well, yeah, I saw him talking about that the other day. I think he was saying the suit is politically motivated, and he's probably right.
Yeah. You know, but there are, you know, there are a lot of people, you know, not only obviously here in Illinois, but, you know, in other states that want to, you know, they want to go out. I mean, especially with the weather getting better. I mean, I was lucky enough, it was nice enough, I opened our patio door for a little while, and I got to listen to some guy outside cough for about 30 minutes. So that was really exciting.
Yeah, that was good. And well, I hope the person who coughed covered their face with their elbow or whatever you're supposed to do when you start coughing like that outside.
Yeah, I was just lucky that he was far enough away that, you know, I wouldn't have to worry about the, you know, no matter how far the virus allegedly can go. And since I'm basically pretty much already dealing with it, I don't think I could get it again right now. But yeah, it was just kind of like, really, you're going to sit out there and just cough over and over like that and just sit there. But, you know, to each their own, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the way it is. And I notice that people are pretty careful now. And at least when I go shopping, they keep their distance, and the lines are spread out now more than they have been prior to this. And people are trying to get along as best they can. So it's an unfortunate situation, but I guess we're going to have to deal with it at least for another few weeks. And I think even if they do open up the state of Illinois, for example, in June, I think it will be done on a gradual basis. It won't be every theater is going to be packed as it normally would be or anything else. It'll be kind of staggered until we see if there's actual improvement before we can go back to normal again.
Well, you know, even like today, you know, I know there were a few more businesses that were allowed to open back up today. And I went out to do my contactless grocery pickup because, like I said, I've been sick, and God forbid I give it to anybody else. So I do a grocery pickup instead. You know, I just pop the rear of my car and the guy puts the stuff in there for me. And, you know, in reality, I would tip him, but I don't want to get that close to him. So, you know, that's that. And there were a lot more people out today than there have been. And, you know, I mean, obviously it was a beautiful day. I mean, it got to 70, and, you know, so there, you know, people out trying to get stuff done. And I, you know, in a way I don't blame them, but as long as they're smart and safe about it, I don't have a problem with it. It's just the problem is we're not that smart and we're not that safe. So,
no. And,
you know, I mean, you just had the house party in Chicago last weekend.
I'm sure there'll be even more people venturing out over the weekend because it's going to be in the 70s, both Saturday and Sunday. So you think you'll see a few more people out as long as we don't get any rain.
Yeah. So, but all right, well, I digress. We move on to a little NHL here. I saw an article today where Gary Bettman was quoted as basically saying the NHL is determined to finish this season even if they have to delay next season.
Wow.
So I thought that was kind of an interesting move there. You know, and again, obviously we're talking all about money here. They want that TV money for the regular season and the playoffs. I would anybody watch hockey in July if the regular season came back?
I think the ratings would be pretty minuscule, although the hardcore fan would probably watch, I'm sure. And did he say, by the way, if the full amount of the season would be played? It doesn't sound like that would be a likely scenario.
That I have the article here. Let me see if it goes into any detail on how the way it looks here, it says the NHL remains intent on completing this season. So it looks like they're going to try to play everything.
Well, if that's the case, then he's right. Then they would have to delay the start of next season because you know how long the playoffs take in the NHL.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that may be something they may have to change a little bit, you know, depending on rink availability and all that stuff. But, you know, I don't think it would be too big of a problem. Not that I believe they should just cancel everything and start fresh next year. But I don't think it would really be that big of a deal if the NHL had to start in November or December. I don't think it would affect them all that much.
They usually start, late October is normally the start date in the NHL?
Late October or so, you know, maybe mid-October. But, yeah, I don't, you could shorten the All-Star break or you could cut down on some off days. And, you could easily catch up. Of course, the difficult thing will be getting the union to work with you on that because, you know, these players' unions can be nightmares to deal with at times. But I definitely think it's something the NHL could get done. The big question is why they would.
If they did delay the start of next season, would they increase the amount of games played per week to compensate for that?
Yeah, see, he hasn't said anything. There's nothing in the article that says how they would go about doing it. So, the one thing he says, he has no problem with staging games in July or August. So, you know, we could have the Stanley Cup playoffs in August, if depending on who's in it and where they're playing and how they're doing it. So it's...
Mm-hmm.
He
didn't address whether or not it'll be played in empty stadiums or before an actual audience.
Yeah, no, they don't go on to any of that. So, you know, which isn't a surprise. I don't think any of them are ready to say we're going to play our games with no fans. You know, I think they're kind of hoping that, you know, they can get some people in, even if it's just a small number. You know, I'm sure they could do that because obviously you could social distance fans, you know, they could sit multiple seats apart if they had to just to, you know, have some people in the building.
Yeah, well, obviously they wouldn't have a capacity crowd then and it would be a lot different. That's what they're going to do. They're going to do, by the way, when the movie theaters open. It won't be a capacity type situation for quite some time. There will definitely be some social distancing, at least initially.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be for sports, it wouldn't be a bad idea to do that. Again, just to get some fan interaction involved, just comparing it to, like, with wrestling that's going on, since that's the only real pseudo sport, it's weird how much more interesting the AEW product seems just because they have wrestlers sitting around the ring where the WWE has nobody and it literally seems like you're just wrestling in your basement.
Yeah, exactly right. I noticed that also. It seemed to really help the product at AEW to have a dozen or so wrestlers around the ring on both sides, the ones that support a specific wrestler, or the ones that are rooting for another wrestler, heroes and faces, if you will. And it does help. Although AEW did win the ratings war again, I don't think either one of them did all that great in the ratings for this past week.
No, I think they both scored all-time lows this week or something like that. But, you know, I know AEW was a taped show, so they're going back live next week. So I think that's going to help them a little bit. You know, the tough part, of course, you know, I think the problem AEW ran into was they ended up having to do more squash matches because they couldn't get guys there.
Right.
You know, and now that the travel restrictions are going to be relaxed a little bit, you know, you won't see as many of these. And I think that will help them out quite a bit. I honestly don't know what WWE can do at this point. They've got to find a way to inject some excitement. And with no reactions, you know, like
no,
I saw on Wednesday night on the show, they did some stupid comedy skit, but there was nobody there to react to it. So I don't know why you would put that on.
I may have,
you know, I mean,
that for a minute or two. It was a pretty stupid bit, wasn't it? It was
right. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing that needs crowd reaction, no matter how dumb it is, or, you know, how you and I would never be interested in it. You know, there's people who might have been, but with, you know, with nobody there, you know, it's, you know, I mean, it's basically, it's what, it's a sitcom with no laugh track at that point.
Yeah. And I'd be very interested to see what kind of a buy rate. The AEW has a pay-per-view coming up in a few weeks. I think, the 23rd, maybe 3 weeks from tomorrow.
Yeah.
Are they actually going to have people paying for that pay-per-view on an empty arena type thing?
Yeah, I haven't heard. I don't know, you know, what the, you know, because obviously I don't buy them regardless, I don't really care. But, yeah, I would assume it's going to be the same setup they have now. Of course, depending on where they go, you know, they might be able to go to, like, someplace in Florida and allow a few people in because, you know, they decided that the wrestling business is essential. So maybe they could go, you know, go to a smaller venue and, you know, get, you know, 200-300 people if they could keep them far enough apart and get a, you know, get a nice crowd reaction. And then, yeah, I'm sure people would buy the pay-per-view to, you know, to just see it that way. But, yeah, I don't think they'll get too many buys if it's just the setup like they have now.
No. And by the way, that's an interesting point you brought up. If they can have it in an arena for 200 to 300 fans. Like, I always talk about Miracle, of course, in the old days when I used to watch Miracle. I think it held 800 to 1,000 people. And sometimes the crowd reaction at a smaller venue will be a lot more intense than, for example, when they wrestled at the International Amphitheater.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and again, you know, a lot of it would depend on how the, you know, the acoustics are, you know, every venue is different. But, you know, even like if they, you know, they wrestle in the building they're using now, if they're able to put fans in there, you're going to get a whole different show than what you're getting right now. Because, you know, while the wrestlers react, you know, obviously you're not going to get the loud cheers or jeers or the things that, you know, you would get out of an actual audience. You know, and that's why I'm still surprised that the WWE hasn't realized this. And, you know, at this point, I mean, who cares if you're copying them? If it's going to make your show better to get through this and get more people to watch, you'd think you'd want to do it. But, you know, I know Vince McMahon is a stubborn SOB, and I guess he doesn't want to be seen as he stole something from AEW.
Yeah, he wouldn't want to be accused of copying, even though if it might help their product a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the oddest thing with that. But, you know, that's, unfortunately, that's how, you know, the wrestling business kind of goes. You
yeah.
know, the, they're, pig-headed, and, you know, I got it first, and this is mine, and, you know, you can't do that, so.
Yeah, I was amused a couple of weeks ago when they were advertising the AEW empty arena match with Jon Moxley and well, what do you expect? 10,000 roaring fans? It's not going to happen.
Well, you know, it was funny because they did the same thing on they did on that NXT program. Triple H sat in the ring and cut a promo with the two wrestlers who were feuding at the time. It was the two top guys. And he actually said he's going to go out and book an empty arena so they could figure out, you know, they could end this once and for all. And all I kept thinking is, you're standing in an empty arena. Why do you have to go book one? So.
Yeah, it's really amusing when you think about it. Well, there's a lot more room for the wrestlers to run around and clock each other over the head with chairs and all the other stuff they do in an empty arena match.
So, yeah, it was just, you know, it was just kind of humorous. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, if things were different, it would make a lot more sense. But just with the way things are going, yeah, I was like, wait, what did he just say? He's gonna find an empty arena? So does that mean he just doesn't want the wrestlers in the back? Is that what he's talking about?
Yeah, desperate times for the wrestling business right now, and for everybody else. And we hope that things get better for everybody as soon as possible.
Yeah, and you know, and it seems now, I mean, one way or the other with these states, you know, and again, Illinois didn't do this, but like a lot of states have, you know, started opening up. You know, my buddy went and golfed in Wisconsin earlier this week because I think their courses opened on Monday. You know, and I heard one of the local radio personalities talking about how he's been golfing all along in Indiana because they never closed the golf courses.
Yeah, every state is different and
does present
a problem. You would like to see a little consistency, but, well, we do have 50 states, and I guess we all have each one of them have the right to govern differently. Now, is it possible that the federal government can do some kind of a mandate that would have to be followed by every state? But, of course, that might present problems, too.
Yeah, I thought I heard someone propose that, but then they said that's not allowed. So apparently that would not be able to happen.
Yeah, and we are supposed to have checks and balances here, unlike some of the countries like China and Russia. And you would think that I guess we're going to have to go along with each state making their own decisions regarding certain restrictions being lifted over the course of the next few weeks, if not already.
Yeah, just one of those, that's why I always kind of laugh when, you know, I hear people say, well, you know, look at, you know, how less the totals of people getting this are in like China or places like that. And you got to remember, it's a different government system. When you're told to stay home in China, you stay home in China. So.
And we don't really know how accurate the information is out of China is in
right.
terms of people getting the virus.
So, yeah, you know, that's the other, you know, funny thing is it's like, yeah, you really kind of think they're honestly reporting everything. You know, I mean, I don't think any country does, so.
Right, and in the meantime, the leader of the North Korea seems kind of faded from sight recently. So is he sick?
Yeah. Who knows?
When you say who knows, that reminds me of the catchphrase of the famous Shadow Radio show from yesteryear. Who knows
that
evil lurks in the hearts of men? And you actually know that one, huh?
Oh yeah, I listen to that. I listen to old time radio all the time. There's a station on TuneIn, and there's one on Sirius XM. So I listen to all those old medleys of stuff all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty funny when you listen to it now, and of course, you know, when I was a kid listening to it, I didn't notice it, but let's knock on the door, and then you hear the knocking on the door. You know, it's One thing, as I mentioned to you before, growing up listening to radio, you use your imagination quite a bit. And when all these shows eventually came to TV, they didn't seem to be quite as good as when I used to listen to one on the radio, because the imagination was better than the actual cheap, shoddy special effects they show when they came to TV in the early 50s, late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they, like just today they played three or four Johnny Dollars in a row, and that's one of the ones I really like.
Was that the one that Sinatra played, or is there somebody else played Johnny Dollar?
No, it was, I think two different guys played him through the series. One started, and then somebody else took over right before I think it went to television. I know Bob Bailey was the one I heard today. He was playing the part, but yeah, I don't remember if well, maybe he was the only one who did it. Maybe I can find it here, but yeah, he was the one I heard today. So
yeah, interesting. There, I'm trying to remember, the name escapes me at the moment. There was a famous quiz show that was very popular in the early 50s called Beat the Clock. And I'm trying to remember the moderator, but anyway, he did the voice of the Green Hornet on the radio years before that. So a lot of these guys had their hand in radio, too, before they came to TV.
Oh, wow. Well, God, I was way off there. Looks like there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different guys who actually played Johnny Dollar. So
yeah, it's a... On the radio, you can get away with that, and I'm sure most of the people didn't recognize the difference in the timbre of the voice from one radio actor to another.
So yeah, I always humorously wondered if they would work as podcasts now, if people would come back to listen to stuff like that, but, you know, who knows?
Once again, go back to the shadow.
Yeah. They
did try a few years ago to resurrect the old radio format in some shows, and they tried it, I think, on national, one of the network radio programs, but I don't think it did too well. So it was an experiment that was attempted but didn't last very long.
Yeah, well, you know, you figure as a podcast, you know, you don't have to you can listen to it at your leisure. You don't have to you know, the advantage to us, I mean, you know, all our stuff goes over to TuneIn when we're done here. So if you miss us, you know, you want to listen, all you got to do is head over there.
And if you listen on TuneIn, say you listen to an old show that you missed, and you break off, say, at the halfway point in the show, when you resume, will it pick up where you left off, or do you have to kind of fast forward to where you were listening to the show?
Yeah, no, I think you have to start over again. I've never actually not listened to something completely, so I don't know officially, but yeah, I think my guess would be you would have to start over.
And TuneIn.com, or I have to take a look at that and see if.
It's TuneIn.com. I get it through, it's part of my Echo Dot service that Dan bought me for, I don't remember if it was a birthday or Christmas or whatever. So that works out kind of nicely. I just kind of ask it what to play or tell it what to play, and it goes and searches it. And as long as it's available for free, I get to listen to it.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
So... You know, and they do offer a pay option. There's you can pay for a music service, but I don't listen to it enough to where it would be worth my while to pay out any money. You know, like I said, the most fun I have is jumping around listening to the different Mickey Mouse stations that are on there, the ESPN sports stations. Now that they own so many, you can kind of jump from town to town and listen to them complain like we get here.
I'm wondering if the sports shows in Chicago, the score and what is it, the 1000, ESPN 1000, is it still that, call that? I'm sure their ratings have gone way down since the sports have been curtailed, but I guess they're still doing the sports commentary every day. I don't know what they talk, can find to talk about anymore.
Well, you know, luckily they've had football. You know, they could talk about the draft and how the draft was going to go and, you know, all those kind of things. You know, now they can talk about how they did in the draft. So, you know, and why the Bears were carrying 10 tight ends.
Yeah, I was going to ask you your opinion on the Bears draft. And first of all, how do you pronounce that tight end they got that from the Chicago area, K-N-E-T? Do you know the correct pronunciation of his last name?
Most people I've heard have been pronouncing it Kinnett, but
right,
I don't know if that's not. So, yeah, you know, oddly, tight end news-wise, Bears, and obviously sad news. I don't know if you remember Ryan Wetnight. He was a former
sure.
Bears tight end. He actually passed this morning.
Wow.
So, and he wasn't very old, but I remember him, you know, as a Bear. He was a, you know, not a great player, but he was a solid player.
Yeah, he played a few years.
And he was only 49. Yeah, he was
announce,
only 49.
Did they announce the cause of death? Or?
Let me see. I've got the article here. Let me see if I can find it. No, let's see. He spent 7 seasons with the Bears. Graduated from Stanford, so that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, very impressive. Man. The guy got smart, had smarts. You don't get a free
yeah,
ride
no,
there.
Unfortunately, they don't. Oh, here you go. He in 2019, they discovered an inoperable tumor near his stomach. So right now, they're kind of assuming that was the cause of death, but
yeah.
Nothing official has been said.
All right, that's too bad. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Lose someone.
Yeah, just 49.
Yeah.
That's awfully young.
Yeah, too young. Too young.
But, yeah, you know, draft-wise with the Bears or any other team, it's so difficult now just to, you know, you look at these guys and, well, yeah, hey, great, they look fantastic on tape, but, you know, now they're coming to a different level and a different league and a different speed. You know, and I know I heard the one guy they picked, that first fifth-round pick that, I guess it's Travis Gibson, is supposed to be very talented, but apparently had a lot of discipline problems. And that's why he hung around till the 5th round. So maybe they'll end up with a steal there if they can kind of keep things, you know, on the straight and narrow. But, you know, like these other guys, I saw Komet play because I watched some of the Notre Dame games and, you know, I mean, he was okay, you know, but like, they drafted guys from Utah, Tulsa, Georgia Southern, to Colorado and Tennessee State. And I can tell you, I didn't watch any of those games last year. So.
No, and the Bears have taken a chance a few times by drafting guys with discipline problems. And you know, I can think of a couple that didn't work out for them very well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's hit or miss, and it's really hit or miss with any of these guys. So, you know, we won't know till a couple years, 3-4 years, maybe 5 years down the road, if this was a good draft or not.
Yeah.
So. Oh, but I'm going to take off and start on the show. The only one that's going to be back Monday at 4:30. Again, we're kind of struggling things depending on who wants to do it, but hopefully we'll be here then. Check us out while we're going to look for the new blog tomorrow morning.